Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It is the Coach Home, Neil Atkinson and John Gibbons, having a little look at, we're looking at Bournemouth and West Brom this week, John, and we're going to take our time doing so. A nice little relax first. So first one, we've got James Roach to talk about Bournemouth. And James, I want to be honest with you, I've got you on mainly to tell you off for bringing Evertonians such joy.
I'm sorry, it wasn't intentional.
Conceding six isn't great.
No. And I mean, like Eddie Howe was saying after the game, we showed a load of spirit to get it back to 3-2. And I was hopeful that we might kind of get it back to 3, but I was always thinking, do you know what, I can see us conceding again. And then lo and behold, we didn't just concede one, we had 3. So yeah, at the back is really where our biggest problem is at the moment, for sure.
It's funny. He can't, from the outside looking at it, it seems to me that he can't quite settle on a back four. That's what I'm looking at, is that every single week it looks as though, whether it's through suspension, a little bit of injury, there's this chopping and changing all the time.
Yeah, there's been that. So we had Simon Francis was sent off against Arsenal. It shouldn't have been a sending off, and he missed 3 games. Adam Smith's had bits and bats of injuries, so he's been in and out. Charlie Daniels has then got injured as well, so he's been out. So it's to be honest, I think he knows what his top back four is, but I think we've been unlucky with injuries and suspensions, and then when they come back together, they're not quite doing it as well. So it's the poor run of form we're going through at the moment, and the goals we conceded has coincided with injuries and suspensions, and also Nathan Aki, Chelsea very kindly pulled him back into their reserves for
that reason. That one strikes me as interesting. When that first happened, I think everyone thought they might be thinking of using him, but they've got this ridiculously settled back three, they're winning every week, as we all know. You know, he's not even making, I don't even think he made the bench last against Arsenal. They've pulled him back. They must have their reasons for pulling him back, but it's looking odder and odder.
It was really frustrating because he was doing great with us, and you know, our form was really good, and you know, we were thinking, well, we might even have a punt at getting him on a permanent here. And then for them to suddenly recall him, I thought at the time, well, that's a strange one, because I can't see them playing him. He's great for us, really good, but you know, is he really top level Chelsea? I wasn't that sure, if I'm honest. But yeah, he's taken him back, and just, I think he's played in the cup game, and that was it. He's not even in the squad otherwise, and it's really frustrating because he'd make a world of difference to us.
You feel it must be frustrating for the player as well, because he want to play. He's never really, I'm sure, you know, felt completely like a Chelsea player. He's out there in Bournemouth. He's playing Premier League football. You know, he's doing all right. And you know, it almost kind of you feel like the player's kind of not really kind of consulted in this, or kind of their kind of welfare. It seems very much like a well adjusting case. And you know, I mean, Chelsea have kind of got the right to do that. But you know, is he not just in case? You know, in September as well. It's the timing that seems quite strange to me.
It was really odd, and I don't think Conte's come out and explained it. I think even if I were a Chelsea fan, I'd be a bit miffed, because I'm thinking, well, you know, he's out there playing 90 minutes every week, playing really well, he's still our player, and now he's just there in the reses, not really doing anything. And so Aki, I think, said he was a bit nervous about going back because he hadn't been there really 2 years. He was at Watford and then with us. So yeah, I think if I were him, I'd be gutted, really. It's their player, it's their right to do it, so you know, there's not really a lot we can do.
But it's also that he's part of something at Bournemouth. I mean, I think it must be a funny thing to be a footballer, but one of the things that happens is that obviously you buy into the idea that you're playing with this gang of lads, even if it's just for a season, and you've got quite clear goals at Bournemouth. It's stay up, it's impress, it's, you know, there's a real team thing. He scores, for instance, against Liverpool, and you know, in a 4-3, which must have been great for everyone's spirit.
Did you notice that?
I did, yeah. I'm on top. Don't worry about James. Right. I'm on top of all that sort of stuff, James. I've got a black book of everybody who scores against us, and sadly, it's getting more and more full. But no, there is a, you know, he's had all of that, and then to sort of have that taken away is a little, well, you know, to get back into a limbo. And I'm sure it feels great around Chelsea at the minute on the one hand, but on the other hand, I'm sure it feels great to be around Chelsea at the minute if you're playing, and then you're bouncing into training thinking, well, this is all fabulous. Whereas Aki's now back into a position where he's almost, you know, he's not a Bournemouth player, obviously, but simultaneously, he's not really being a Chelsea one.
No, that's it. You're right. You know, in a nutshell, I'm sure he is in limbo. I know a guy who's a football agent, and there's a portal or something that he has access to on deadline day. And apparently, we did all the documentation to get Aki back on a permanent. So they just rejected the bid. So I think I'd be really miffed if I were him. That, you know, he's been pulled out of a winning team where he's playing regular, to be lobbed in the reserves with no real hope, and then rejecting what I imagine was a decent offer. Because I know Eddie Howe even came out and said that he'd offered some money. He said it wasn't as reported in the press, but yeah, I feel for him, and it's had a real negative impact on us for sure.
I mean, the Callum Wilson one's a real blow, isn't it? It's gutted for him from our point of view. He doesn't kind of, you know, is not a Bournemouth fan. I just kind of feel sorry for him. But from a Bournemouth point of view as well, it's not great timing indeed, you know, going into this crucial part of the season.
No, that's right. I think the funny one with Callum Wilson, because since he's come back from his injury, he's not really got back to his best. He sort of seems to have lost a bit of his pace, maybe lost a yard of pace and lost how clinical he was early part of last season before the injury. So it was kind of a bit difficult watching him at times, to be honest, anyway. And he was in and out of the team. Afobe was kind of nudging ahead of him, but he was still a threat. And I think, you know, when the opposition saw him on the team sheet, they knew they were going to be in for a game, because he is quick, he's strong. So to not be, you know, so not being able to select him for the rest of the season is a real pain. So we're pretty threadbare up front now. And he's let Lewis Graben go to Reading on loan, and Glenn Murray's gone back to Brighton on a permanent now. So we're pretty much a Phobie and Josh King, and, you know, there's not hatfuls of goals there, unfortunately. It was very much spread across the team. So, yeah, it's a real pain that Wilson's out.
Though King does manage to get himself a brace at the weekend there, leading the line, and he's had a funny season again. He's another player who I think is slightly undermined by his own versatility, really. King, he's been the one who gets moved, it's fair to say, isn't it, James? He's the one who Howe's happy sort of shunt back, move him left, move him right, back through the middle, sometimes in the middle of the three in a 4-2-3-1, then back up front. He gets his games, but he's not really allowed to settle into a position.
No, that's right. And I think a few people were clamouring him for him to go back leading the line, because back end of the season last year, when he had to, because, you know, Wilson was out, he was really good, and he was a real handful, and he was getting a few goals. That probably is his only thing, is that he just doesn't score enough goals. But I agree with you. He's played a whole load of different positions, and I love the guy. I think, you know, work rate's brilliant. He's skillful. He's quick. He's got everything, really. But he's not. Neither is he an out and out goal scorer or an assist machine. You know, he's just kind of a really, really steady player that Eddie really believes in, and he'll put him in whatever position. But maybe it might be the opportunity for him now with Wilson out, and he certainly showed that at the weekend. I thought it was brilliant. Took his two goals really well. So maybe it'll go with that. I hope so.
Did at the weekend, when I was talking before about the back four, actually, was it a back three at the weekend? Because I've just looked at the team sheet and I can't quite work out who's playing where. Did he go with three centre-halves in Francis Cook and Mings, and use Fraser as a wing-back on one side and Gosling on the other, or Pugh on the other?
It was Pugh on the other, yeah. Gosling sort of in the midfield with Arthur, and then Sermon sat behind them. But I think after 45 minutes, he realised the error of his ways, that's for sure, because we did three at the back against Chelsea, and it didn't really work. And he hasn't really done it that much since. But tried it on Everton, and yeah, it was horrific. And Simon Francis came off at half-time because he gifted them the third, and that's the second time he's done that this season, where he literally just passed it to a striker to plant it.
Yeah, it was a great ball.
It was, wasn't it? It was beautiful. But, disappointed. But it was three at the back Saturday. I don't think it worked for us, to be honest.
I mean, do you feel like you're in a little bit of trouble? You've got a few tough games coming up. I know you've got both Manchester clubs in the next three games, and then West Brom in between them. The bottom three, who look dead and buried, are starting to pick up a few points. I mean, we're giving them most of them, to be honest with you, but they're starting to pick up a few points. And do you worry a little bit that you might get dragged into it?
Yeah, I do a bit. I think, as you say, the teams below us, they've made the changes managerial level and seems to be having the desired effect now, and it's closing it all up a little bit there. So, yeah, I think looking at the next three games, that West Brom game becomes absolutely crucial. If we go three games now without a win, then it's looking really bleak. We won't have won since December, coming into March pretty much. So, I think if that is the case as well, that, you know, we don't get anything out of that West Brom game, we will be pretty bunched up then down the bottom. I still think we're good enough. We're just having one of those horrible barren spells, which obviously you're a bit familiar with at the minute as well. But I do think we're too good. And I've always said, you know, there's definitely three worse teams than us. But at the minute, it's just everything. We're just having that type of spell where everything's going against us. We're getting the injuries, we're getting the suspensions, we're not playing particularly well, can't pick up a point, but all it takes is a couple of games to turn that around, and we're capable of winning two or three on the bounce, I think, that will then get us back out of the grief.
Mentioned the West Brom game there. I mean, I think that one is away from home, so that's not great from a Bournemouth point of view, but it is still a feeling that obviously the home form, as happened last season, can pull you around. I think John's mentioned there that the next three aren't great, but then after that it's home against West Ham and then home against Swansea and then go into Southampton, and maybe, you know, with that being a derby, you could get something from that. It's not, the whole situation isn't insurmountable as such. In fact, it's far from insurmountable. You're currently in 14th. It's one of them really where you just need the next win, isn't it? I think that's probably what I'm trying to drive at here. If you just get the next win under your belt, then you're able to go, right, all right, that pressure's off us a bit.
Yeah, totally. I think we're at about the same points as we were last season, to be honest, at this stage. You know, obviously, if we went back three or four games, we were well ahead where we were at, but we've stagnated. But what he did last season, I think it was Swansea, West Brom, and I can't remember who else it was. I think it was Villa, where he said, you know, basically, we've got to win these next three games. And we did. And that put us at about 36, 37 points, and we were safe. So I think, yeah, you look at like the West Ham, Swansea, and then there's a couple of runs after that as well where you think, you know what, we could get 3 points out of those. So it will be where the next one comes from. And I'm not too panicky, but I can see little runs of games where I think, yeah, we'll win two or three and we'll be all right.
All right, just before we let you go, going through everything that has been going on there and the weekend's game as well, there's the ongoing situation with Wilshere, which is fascinating. He sets up, I think it's the first this weekend for King. Yep. He appears to be genuinely settled in a way which I don't quite see how him returning to Arsenal will help. I mean, you know, I'm sure this is the sort of thing that's going to grow as you get closer and closer to the summer. Is there a feeling around Bournemouth that it's plausible that you might keep hold of him, or is the general sort of vibe that it is just going to be a one-year deal?
It depends who you talk to, really. I think the optimists will say, yeah, you know, he's staying. He's best mates with Ben Akinfobe. And I guess it was probably tricky when Afobe was in and out of the team, because you were thinking, well, if Afobe moves on, then, you know, what else is going to tempt Wilshere to stay? I don't know. Personally, I can't see it, because I think there'll be clubs, you know, much bigger clubs that will come in for him, and he won't be able to resist that. But having said that, you know, we've been good to him. He's been good for us. So there's got to be a bit of plausibility there, otherwise he wouldn't have even come on loan to us. But I guess it would just be who we're up against, really, for his signature.
Okay, right. Always good to speak to James about Bournemouth. And now let's shoot off and find out what's happening with West Brom.
It's John Gibbons back with a slightly disjointed coach home. I've lost Neil Atkinson, unfortunately, but I'm joined by Daniel Hewitt. He's going to tell us, well, speak to us about West Brom, what's been going on about West Brom. And we're going to get into the Berahino thing because it's a very unusual situation, quite a unique situation to hear about stuff like this. And, you know, it needs a bit more delving into. So nice to speak to you, Dan, first of all.
Hello, how are you, John? You're right.
Great, yeah, great. Okay, well, we'll start with this Berahino thing, if you don't mind, because it's quite a big story, really. He's to have kept it quiet for as long as they did is quite unusual in sport, really. Normally these things kind of leak out. Normally the club might put it out, but it's been kept quieter. Then I know Mark Hughes has spoken the last couple of days of his disappointment that as soon as he moves to their club and there's a, funny enough, a game between the two that it comes out. And what's your been understanding of what's going on?
Well, I mean, Stoke in the last few days of obviously Charlie Adam as today talked about the disappointment that it came out when it did. I mean, it's quite clearly there's been some kind of tactic from someone somewhere at West Brom where they've attempted to get this out in the build of the game. I think it's part of the kind of tactical build-up. I think this wouldn't have happened, this leak generally wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Berahino's reaction. And Berahino's continued sniping at the club.
Yeah.
His decision not to sign a new contract came after the club had kept it quiet for months of this drugs ban. He knew his contract was up in the summer. The club wanted him, understandably, to sign a contract so they could get more money for him. He refused to do so. Now, at the time, that seemed to make sense. But if you look back now, you think the club had stood by him, not just because of the drug ban, but also he was going for drink driving. He was filmed taking another drug at one point in his West Brom career. And West Brom have stood by him the whole time. He continued to play him. And every time Berahino has had an offer in from another club, he's already rattled out the pram. He refused to play on two occasions. As I think West Brom's patience probably wore thin. And even though Berahino did apologise to the fans when he joined Stoke, he didn't in any way thank the club for standing by him during two or three pretty tumultuous years. And I think the least he could have done was at least sign a contract extension to allow the club to sell him for more money, considering the club had stood by him. So I think patience with Pulis and the club have probably worn thin with Berahino. I mean, in many ways, I do feel sorry for him. He's a lad who came to this country, he's a young lad as a refugee. He clearly hasn't got someone who's putting their arm around to look after him. His agent clearly isn't looking after him and doing the right job for him. The club have attempted to do that. But there comes a point where two or three years of this kind of behaviour means the club really, they don't have a responsibility to look after someone who clearly doesn't appreciate being looked after.
Yeah, I mean, there's a quote from here from Tony Pulis who kind of echo what you said. He says, the club has been absolutely fantastic towards Sadio. The way it's protected him, the way it's looked after him, he should be really, really grateful. And it's the really, really that kind of gets to me that the club must be thinking, well, you know, maybe we could have let him go earlier when his big move to Tottenham come on, but we didn't have to, you know, let Tottenham do whatever they wanted. And you know, the more you hear, the more you think, well, the club have kind of tried everything in terms of rehabilitating him into the club and have seemed
yeah,
to me to
I
try to do
you
what they can.
To it earlier when you said that the club had kind of stood by Berahino. I think it was more than stood by him. I mean, the fact that you said that it hadn't been leaked out, which is often a surprise, and you said that
yeah,
these things often do come out, I think it shows the level of concern and the level of sensitivity the club knew what they're dealing with Berahino. This is not a young lad who's had a normal upbringing. He's had a very difficult upbringing and clearly has had a lot of trouble in his life leading up to the point where he came to the UK. And so the club, I think, have always looked after him. Let's not forget, though, he came to the club as a young man, has been in the club for a very long time. This isn't the last two or three years. West Brom gave him his first professional contract. They upped his wages. They gave him a new contract after that first initial professional contract and put him in a Premier League team at the age of 19, which, again, it's not just the fact they stood by him. It's the fact that up until recently, the club has done everything they can to give him a start in life, give him a good professional career. And I've seen Charlie Adam today sort of allude to the fact that, Stan Collymore today, allude to the fact in a column that Tony Pulis is probably not the right kind of manager to put an arm around a player. I disagree with that completely. We've got a lot of young players at West Brom who are thriving at the moment, who are making the odd first team appearance. And if you look at Berahino's career at West Brom, he's been there not just under Tony Pulis, but under Steve Clarke, under Pepe Mel, and Alan Irvine. And he's been being like this under all those managers. I think it's unfair to kind of pin it on Pulis, who has this reputation as a bit of a hard nut. But I think with Berahino, the fact that this didn't come out shows that Pulis was by no means looking for revenge. And I think if you look at the kind of help Berahino needs, the club have genuinely tried to offer him that.
Yeah.
As I said, it comes to a point where you can only do so much, and refusing to play for the club on several occasions. And the West Brom obviously received a lot of money from Tottenham, it was believed at one point, but at that time we were in a relegation battle, we only had two strikers. It's not in the club's, the club haven't got a personal responsibility to Berahino, they have a responsibility to the fans who pay the money to stay in the Premier League. And so Berahino, as a man who's been given a contract by West Brom, should appreciate that. So his apology to the fans was meaningless, and what he really should be apologising to is the club who stood by him, and I think West Brom have clearly run out of patience.
Where do you think Berahino goes now? Well, he's gone to Stoke in a very simple point of view, but do you see him having his good career? I mean, it's, you know, we're looking into crystal balls here a little bit, but he certainly doesn't look fit for a start. You know, he doesn't look like...
he's overweight.
Yeah, he's overweight. So I'm not expecting too much from him this season, but going forward, do you think he can have anything like the career that it'll look like he might do when he was 19, 20?
The thing is, I mean, this is just my opinion. I don't think he's the player that the London press... a match of the day, in particular, has kind of built him up to be.
Yeah.
I think he has flashes of really good quality. His goal at Man United is an example of that. He's scored a couple of other good goals. He's, you look at the kind of the detail of his goal scoring record, lots of penalties, lots of goals at home, goals against smaller teams in the FA Cup and League Cup competitions. He, away from home, doesn't score particularly well, doesn't travel well at all. I think when I think of Berahino, I'm immediately drawn to the chances he's missed than the chances he's scored. At Watford last season, at 0-0, should have scored. Man United last season, absolute sitters. And I know that's they're kind of, you can pick out examples of good and bad, but Berahino, I don't think he's the player people have built him up to be. I think he's talented. I think he's young still. I think he clearly has something. But again, I go back to the lack of professionalism. Sergio Berahino is responsible for Sergio Berahino. He has to be responsible for his fitness and for his weight. He is unfit. He's overweight. Now, Tony Pulis and the club can't make him train to the best of his ability. That's got to be up to him. For a man who wanted to move to Tottenham 18 months ago, he's ended up on the bench at Stoke. And that's partly because he refused to play. And then when he did play, he was unfit. Berahino has to be responsible for himself. And I think it comes to a point where how many times have you got to give him a chance? Now, Stoke, obviously, is a kind of second chance, a different club. Mark Hughes, I don't know Mark Hughes. He might be a particularly different manager and have patience with him. But Stoke are under the same pressures that West Brom are under. They're battling in the Premier League, above that kind of relegation precipice, of albeit at the moment okay. But when clubs start slipping into places where they might be, their survival is brought into question.
Yeah.
They don't have time. You don't have patience for people like Berahino. So Berahino, I think, has to be responsible for himself. And the fact that he hasn't even had the kind of the vision to stay fit, I think, shows a lot about him personally.
Okay, well, West Brom are doing well. Won again at the weekend, beat Stoke, which is a funny way that these, you know, the Premier League fixtures kind of throws these up eventually. But beat Stoke, doing well. 36 points from 24 games is just very, very good, isn't it? It's a great return. It's a little bit of a shame Everton are looking so good, well, for loads of different reasons. But one of them is that, you know, you'd be looking at seventh as a real possibility otherwise. But, you know,
you guys let us down, because I was looking at the kind of the maths of the table. If you'd have got to the League Cup final with Man United,
right,
and then the FA Cup finalists were both top five, the top five, the Europa League could have fallen to eighth.
Liverpool are letting everyone down at the moment, mate.
Exactly. I have a bone to pick with you guys. But no, I think you're right. I think if you look at last season, I mean, there's so many of the clubs, and I mean, it was like a battle to who could finish lowest. I mean, so many clubs just didn't want to take up that sort of fifth, sixth, seventh spot. Everyone kept losing. Man United were in trouble, obviously, and I mean, you guys were finding your feet under Klopp. So I think this season, I think a lot of clubs have got their act together, and that top seven looks like it's going to stay exactly as it is. I think you're right. I think we're trying to break into that top seven when Everton are playing so well under Koeman, and you've got obviously Lukaku banging in goals, and we obviously know all about him when he was at West Brom. So we're ecstatic with eighth. I think we will stay eighth. I think seventh is a realistic possibility, but I think that's more about Everton than it is about us.
Yeah.
But as I say, I go back to it when we started, when I started kind of contributing to this podcast with you guys, we were talking about West Brom and we were talking about Tony Pulis being under pressure,
yeah.
which is, and I said to you at the time, is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm glad I did say it, because it is.
It's on record. Ridiculous.
It's on record. You can go back and find it on the Aston Villa website. Because he's a quality manager who knows what he's doing, whose record at every club is he speaks for itself. If you look at Stoke, they're below us in the Premier League, and Pulis left Stoke. You look at Crystal Palace, he kept them up, and now they're fighting for the lives with a good manager in Allardyce. Everywhere Pulis goes, he improves the club, and every time he leaves, they get worse. And I think the job he's done is remarkable with the squad he's got. As a West Brom fan, I couldn't be happier, really. And our record is set to be broken. We've got to get 14 points from 14 games to beat our Premier League record. As I say, it's just a shame that it seems to be in this. We've picked a season where everyone around us is doing well as well. But yeah, delighted with eight.
Yeah, you can still enjoy wins. I mean, we've talked about Benahino leaving, obviously, in January. A couple were brought in as well. One of which was Jake Livermore, who I saw got man of the match at the weekend. It has always looked a nice player to me, and it's a nice move for him, I think. And I only saw the highlights, but seemed to impress at the weekend.
Yeah, he was absolutely superb. I think he broke a number of stats in terms of tackles and distance covered and all sorts of things in one game. He looked a real, real quality player on Saturday, especially filling in for Claudio Jakob, who I went to Middlesbrough on Tuesday and was our man of the match. And as we've talked about Jakob on this programme before, he's a fantastic player. To fill in for him and look like he'd been playing all season alongside Fletcher and Morrison was great to see. Eyebrows are raised slightly when we paid £10 million for him. I think we all know the market's ridiculously overinflated.
Yeah.
And £10 million is about what you pay now for a kind of standard midfielder in the Premier League. It's slightly ridiculous, but that seems to be the case. But it's the kind of player we need, in that we if we are going to consistently stay sort of seventh, eighth, ninth in the league, we are going to have players on the bench who are as good as the players playing on the pitch. And I've said to you guys before about the difference between West Brom and Liverpool is that you can afford to have a couple of injuries and players can fill in. We haven't had that luxury, and Saturday was a perfect example of where one of our best players is injured, Livermore comes in and kind of it's business as usual. So great signing. I think the signing of Mark Wilson's a good signing as well for Bournemouth. We need cover at full back, and I think Pulis has kind of pulled that out of the bag at the last minute, which is good. I think we still need a striker. I'm still not totally convinced by Rondon. He's really kind of hit and miss. He missed a couple of sitters at Middlesbrough on Tuesday, and I think long term we do need a kind of consistent striker. I often think if we had Defoe or Lukaku up front, I think we could break into that top seven. But I think that's what we're really lacking, is a kind of consistent goal scorer. If you look at our team, so many goals come from midfield and defence. We don't rely on a sort of number nine to bang 20 goals a season. So I think if we had that, then we'd be a real force to reckon with.
Okay, I mean, your home form has been incredible. I think you saw six wins in the last seven, which is fantastic. You've got two big away games coming after you. Next week, you've got West Ham away, who are one place directly below you, I think. And then there's two home games after that, and then there's the away game at Everton. And you think if you can get to the end of that run unbeaten, and with maybe a couple of home wins in there as well, then you are starting to think about European places and things like that, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, our record against the teams below us is remarkably good. The record of this season against teams above us is really bad. We haven't really beat any of them above us so far, and we lost to Everton at home earlier in the season. I think you're right. I think if we can keep picking up points at home and keep beating the teams below us, if we can pick up the odd win against the teams above us. I mean, I really, really fancy our chances against anyone, genuinely. And that's, as a West Brom fan, I'm not used to saying that very often, but I genuinely feel we can go anywhere now and pick up a point or pick up a win. Tottenham away I went to at Christmas, we were absolutely awful, but that's one of the only games I've seen this season where we weren't really in it at all. Even at your place when you guys were 2-0 up and we got it back to 2-1 and put you under a bit of pressure, yeah. we have that ability to kind of get back into games. And yeah, I think you're right. I think if we can get to that Everton game and be within a kind of leapfrogging distance of them, that makes for a really exciting season. But as I say, I think the Premier League from sort of eight downwards is so difficult to judge now. And if you look at that kind of bottom four or five, you've seen Palace, Hull, and Swansea all change their managers, and it looks like it's kind of paying off. They're starting to pick up points and winning games. So I think anyone can beat anyone in that sort of bottom 12 now. So if we can keep consistent, then I think eighth is out for the taking, really.
us for the take. All right, huge thanks to Dan. It's nice to get a huge amount of positivity on the Coach Home. It's not always the case, but yeah, thanks a lot to Dan. And yeah, that has been the Coach Home.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.